This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM.
Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning to you.
Good Sunday morning to you, Scott. We have one of our favorite guests on today who's going to talk about, as we try to do almost every quarter, the state of the global economy, the state of the U.S. economy, how it affects Montana. You know, we're ending 2025, what 2026 is going to look like. And that's, Dr. Robert Tino Sonora, professor of finance at the University of Montana.
College of Business. Yep. And our year-end wrap-up will be a spirited conversation, I'm sure. When we come back, our guest will be Tino Sonora, professor of finance at the University of Montana's College of Business. Back after these words. Arnie, we are back with returning champion Tino Sonora, and we're talking all things the economy 2025.
Tino, it's always good to have you back on the show and getting your big picture perspective on the economy. We had you last quarter. You know, things were still kind of up in the air. Now they're flat on the ground, and so we have a pretty good handle on where we're going to end 2025. And maybe I'll just begin for our listeners by asking you, what's your assessment overall, big picture, of where we stand right now in the economy?
Well, first, thanks for having me back. It's always fun to chat with you guys. And to be honest, since we've had just, we're still kind of like a month behind with data because, after the government shutdown, we lost all of our data generating.
Well, everything's fine and great, so you don't need any jet data.
Yeah, right. So we got last week's PCE inflation rate indicator, which again is the Fed's preferred measure, the price of consumer expenditures. They use that one, not the CPI. But that was for October or September. So same thing. We're a little bit behind there, so we really don't know. Obviously, frustratingly for the Fed, they don't really know either because they're meeting today and tomorrow, and they make their announcement tomorrow. Most people expect them to reduce interest rates because of a variety of reasons, primarily concerned about a little bit of softness in labor markets, but that nagging inflation won't go away. And as long as these tariffs keep going, inflation's going to kick in. And then, I got so many things, right? We've got the healthcare discussion. We got some of these rebate, quote unquote, rebate checks coming back. There's a lot.
Let's unpack this a little bit. Let's talk about, first of all, we're flying blind. This is like trying to land an airplane without having radar, right? You're trying to predict and decide how to adjust and improve the economy with what little bandwidth the Fed has, yet they don't even have the basic information they need to, to try to, ratchet things up or down. So that's right. Always tough. But let's talk for a second first about tariffs and these rebates. So we suck all this money out of people. The administration finally, during this last quarter, admitted that it's the American public who are paying the tariffs. But now they've decided they're going to give rebates back to farmers and, everybody who makes under $100,000 a year, although I don't think there's any plan for any of this yet. They're just saying they're going to do it. How does that mitigate the negative effect that tariffs have had on the economy?
Well, let's just think about this a little bit. I'm kind of ballparking this, but I believe, according to the most recent estimates, the tariffs have generated about $200 billion worth of revenues, which is not that big. I mean, in the grander scheme of things, it's not that big. Income taxes generate $2 to $4 trillion a year. $250 billion is not very much. The sort of quote unquote, what is he calling it? Not a refund check or dividend check for every American, $2,000. Well, let's just restrict that to over the age of 18. And so that's like 250 million people. That's going to leave a huge hole. This is not even remotely closely covered by the tariff revenues, not even close. It's all it's going to do is generate more debt. This is it. So if this comes to pass, the average household, they estimate that the average household, not individual, household will pay somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000 a year in tariff revenues. So we're basically, let's just assume a household of 2.5 people. There, the sort of quote unquote dividend checks are $10,000 per household, which is going to generate, well, could do a couple things. First, what do a lot of people do when they get these kinds of checks? They pay down debt. They don't consume it. They pay down debt. They put it in savings. But let's just assume they do 50%, and all of that money suddenly hits the market. What's going to happen to inflation? I don't know. Well, what could happen is they could have to take that dividend check. It's actually a tax rebate, more along the lines of, then it's not a dividend, and pay down their skyrocketing healthcare costs. Because if this new healthcare bill doesn't pass, then what's going to happen? You know, we're hearing all these people are going to have their premia, what, jump 2 or 3 times. So what, are they going to take this money now, pay down insurance premium? I you know, obviously that's kind of ludicrous. The whole farm bill thing again is it's the same thing. It's like if the tariffs were in place, and he did this during the last administration, right? He raised tariffs on certain goods. There was some retaliatory tariffs put in place. Farmers went into a little bit of it, you know, had some problems because they weren't able to export, or import costs were too expensive for their costs. And so we gave them money for that. So we're doing it all over again. This is just a repeat of what happened, but on a grander scale. And I think with less money. I don't remember what the last time farmers were sort of quote unquote bailed out in, what was it, 2018, 2019. But this is smaller. And I don't know who's getting this money. I mean, I don't know, a fairly substantial majority of total agricultural production, farm production, is done by large industrial farms. So are they going to get all of this $12 billion, or is it going to go to small mom and pop farms? I would prefer to see, if this comes to pass, this go to smaller farms, because they're the people that are going to be suffering the most. And so,
My
where's all this
reading
money
is.
going to come from? We're going to have to issue more debt. Obviously, the Republican Party punted on the whole "we really care about fiscal discipline" years ago, but this is sort of fiscal, undisciplined, sort of on steroids.
Am I reading this wrong, Tino? In the big macro sense, if the government is collecting all this money and redistributing it to certain groups, isn't that like communism?
Well, I prefer to, well, it depends on who's receiving,
I
this
mean,
money.
yeah,
Right.
but I'm.
Yeah, I mean, if it's going to the, if this farm bill is going to the Monsantos of the world and the McDonald Archer and all these guys, then yeah, it's kind of like corporate socialism is a little bit softer term, but that's
Yes.
what it is, right? It is. It's corporate socialism. And that's fine. I mean, but let's just call a spade a spade. I'm not adverse to that. I think if you help firms out to increase their productivity and hire more people and all this stuff, blah, 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 then that, I don't see the harm of it. But, if it's just these kinds of handouts, and I don't know that phrase, what, robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of thing, that's what's going on, essentially. And it's just a sort of sleight of hand, and this, the language around it, where we're giving the quote unquote dividend checks. No, they're a rebate. And they're not even a rebate, they're a rebate plus, right? And all I see right now is generating more debt. And again, I think before, and this kind of been a theme of our discussions for the past year or so, is more debt could result in higher interest rates. Now, again, that's sort of the classical way of thinking about things, is if we borrow a lot more, interest rates have got to go up, risk premium go up. And so far, interest rates have been relatively, they're not out of control. I mean, there's a little bit of craziness between short and long-term interest rates, but they're staying steady. But that requires the Fed to buy up a bunch of this debt, to help keep interest rates low, because it's certainly not going to be foreign countries anymore, because they don't have any dollars, because we've just tariffed all of their stuff. So we're not sending money abroad, so that they can turn around and not only buy our goods, but also buy some of our assets, our financial assets. So that could also put upward pressure on interest rates. So
Well,
it's
look.
just a it's just a it's a it's 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 a palaver, if you will.
Yes, well, we know, I mean, everybody knows that there's a lot of rhetoric that comes out, over Truth Social from the president, and the president, shouts out about tariffing these people and, doing this to our friends and doing this to the people that aren't our friends and all that kind of stuff. But behind that, if you put that aside for a minute and say that's a lot of, foam on the coffee. Are there policy people like the Treasury Secretary and others that have a grasp of a policy that these tariffs and rebates are supposed to, formulate and emulate for everyone a better economic, program and plan for the country? I mean, is there some reason to the rhyme of this?
No.
The short answer.
I was afraid the answer was.
However, all of these policymakers, a Treasury Secretary, et cetera, have in the past, before becoming members of this administration, said exactly what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not saying anything revolutionary. I'm not saying anything that most economists or most policymakers who are even minutely versed in these topics would say. This is not crazy talk. This is just sort of standard stuff. The way this administration operates is that you have a bunch of, you don't have any no men, right, in the administration, or no people, I should say. So this administration's just kind of, everybody's just kind of saying, yeah, it's this is the way it's going to happen, and it's easy, and you can give a lot of information, misinformation, because it's a very, very, very complicated topic, and everybody likes simple answers, and the tariff is a simple answer. But it's only, this is not sustainable. I mean, it is, if we want to enjoy a completely different economy than we had even 6 or 8 months ago.
And what would that different economy look like? Let's assume
Right.
this keeps going.
Right now, I'm worried, it's kind of Ayn Randian, right? I mean, it really is. It's, well, going back to your communism thing, it's like we're telling, by imposing tariffs, we're having this, what it has is a huge influence on the redistribution of resources, and it ends up
Right.
putting resources into things that we're not so good at making, and sort of implicitly deciding what the economy produces. And doing it badly. So I had a revelation. I don't know why it took me so long to figure this out. Maybe because I never thought that I would use this kind of language with a country like the United States. But basically, the United States is using a development plan that was used in Latin America, Africa, called import substitution, where you have these huge, or the infant industry argument, where you have these huge
Right.
tariffs and protect all of your industry. But I mean, all you have to do is look at East German cars from 1970s, 80s, to realize what the impacts of that are. Not good cars, because we protect ourselves from competition. Now, you could argue that the United States has enough buying power. It's a big enough economy that Ford can compete with GE, and GE compete with Dodge, and Dodge can compete with, I don't know, other domestic GM. I might have already said that. But anyway, but we're not competing with, now we can't compete with, we're not competing with BMW, we're not going to compete with VW. So what's going to happen to the net result of our cars? I don't know. I mean, China has been relatively successful. They have a relatively closed economy. Their electric cars are phenomenal, because they all compete with each other. That's the model they kind of chose. It's like, we're just going to throw money at everybody, and let, who's ever standing after 5 years, that's it.
Right.
Maybe it's that kind of thing. But suffice to say, I think what I see is, and I think I told you too, that we mentioned this last time, I see a growth slowdown. I mean, I'm not so concerned about the very near future. I'm concerned more about longer term future. We got consumer confidence. I was just looking at the Michigan consumer confidence sentiment indicator, and since 1978, this is the lowest it's ever been, period. Not including, like, I mean, you could think of all the things that happened since 1978, right? We had wars, we've had COVID, we've had the Great Recession, we've had oil
That
price
the
spikes.
deterioration of the auto industry there.
This is the lowest it's ever been, period. Now, the consumer confidence index, which was put together by the guys, I can never remember what they're called, it's not at that low. So, everybody's got slightly different surveys, but if I would look at just the Michigan one, it's pretty low. So people are going to start pulling back on spending. Well, people start pulling back on spending, then manufacturing investment's going to slow. And in fact, if I was just looking at the most recent data, real GDP, if you look at the real GDP growth in investment in the second quarter of 2025, it was like minus 18% or something. I mean,
So
we
let's
had a huge investment in the first quarter because everybody was trying to invest before these tariffs kicked in.
right.
And then everybody went slammed backwards the opposite direction the next quarter. And if that sort of, we don't know yet because we don't know what the third quarter is because, of course, we're not collecting the data. And it's still a little early for third quarter,
Yeah.
but suffice to say, if that happens, my concern is long-term growth will be undermined by relatively low investment
Right.
over the foreseeable future. And until policy uncertainty goes away, I have a hard time seeing how this will actually work out relatively well.
So the stock market's at an all-time high. Some people say it's an AI blip, there's all this money on the sidelines and it's being pumped into AI. And if that should be, punctured, that balloon, the market is going to just tank. What's your
Right.
sense on how does the market stay at this high point given all these other indicators showing an easing of all of the things that should lead to a robust market?
Well, it's a structural shift in the way we produce, right? So we're moving again away from not just towards robotics like we did, in a sort of, I don't know, the second or third manufacturing revolution where we moved away from people producing things to more robotics producing things. But with AI, we also see a shift away from I don't know, for lack of a white collar types of work, right? Where you don't need machines necessarily, it's in your head. And obviously, we've seen a lot of layoffs in the tech sector recently, but my suspicion is that a lot of the tech companies were sort of bloated. They hired too many people during COVID, and this is kind of a way to get rid of it. But that productivity jump of AI, if it turns out to be as good as possible or as important, as influential as possible as people seem to think it is, then maybe it could counteract some of these other types of things that might slow down our GDP. But it's not going to necessarily show up, I don't think, in employment.
No.
Because if employment, if we can't produce stuff and when employment costs are too high, firms are going to start using alternative types of resources to be able to produce the same amount of stuff. And so we could see, it's feasible, I guess you could argue that we see real GDP growth growing, outpacing employment growth, except for low sort of value-added jobs, right?
Right.
And that's sort of my that's I guess that's my other sort of big concern is that we're seeing a sort of a bifurcation in the economy, which is now being called a K-shaped economy, right? Where you see higher income individuals moving on an upward trajectory and lower income individuals moving down. And my guess is that for many of the sort of lower income households, they're kind of already in a recession. Relative, even though at the macro level, we're not seeing that. That my suspicion is we could actually see that lower income families are in a recession. And certainly these policies are not helping. And if you want to buy low cost things, it's not going to be possible because of tariffs. And so it's sort of, and that's going to reduce spending power. And again, if housing and healthcare costs rise, as some people say they might, and we lose a quarter of the people that were in sort of the ACA, the Affordable Care Act under that sort of auspices of that program, that's only going to cause premium to jump even higher because now the people that least need insurance are probably going to move out of that pool, which is going to raise premium for everybody else because now you've taken out the safest people. And so
Right.
your risk is less shared across healthy and not healthy people. And it's only going to be a cluster of non-healthy
Right.
people. And those risk premiums are going to go through the roof.
I
So then
saw
you're
my
going to
2026 Montana Blue Cross and Blue Shield potential bill, and it's double what it was in 2025.
And our Congress is showing no signs of actually fixing this. I mean,
No.
I was watching one of the late night guys the other night, and they were talking about how many times Trump had mentioned that we have a great healthcare plan that will be rolling out in 6 weeks, and he started in 2015, so 10 years of waiting for this program to come out. I mean, not that I thought that that was true, but he's been making these promises for 10 years, and it still hasn't come to pass. And it looks like it won't pass again. And
No.
my suspicion is what's going to happen is there's going to be an 11th hour vote on, December 31st, and they're going to say, let's continue the subsidies.
Yep.
Because if they don't, it's just going to politically destroy
What
everybody.
do you think his motivation, what do you think the administration's motivation is to do all this, right? I mean, outside of the political kind of color that we're going to add to it, because we both all have a particular horse in this race. I mean, is intent to just bring the economy down and redistribute internationally and globally who the centers of power are, and then benefit privately from that after he's left office? I mean, that's what it kind of feels like. It feels like he's crippling the economy.
Yeah, and I don't, obviously I'm not a political scientist and I don't know, what his motivations are. I mean, as an economist and trying to stay very sort of narrowly inside of those guardrails, I can only think that he thinks they're, or they, it's not just he, they're
The
doing the right thing.
administration.
The administration's doing the right thing. And that would be my hope, but
But in service of
clearly.
what? What would any of this be in
Of
service of?
the American consumer, the American economy. I mean,
There
that would
there is a
be my
there
hope. I
is
mean,
a there is a stream of thought out there that is not based by a lot of underpinning of fact that we've gotten screwed in the global economy, that we have bad negotiators and everybody else has gotten taken advantage of us and we're supporting all these other countries around the world that we don't get a fair shake from, and we're going to crack down on that. Enough is enough. We're putting too much money into all these other people who are doing better than we are. We're just going to stop that. We're going to tariff them or tax them, or we're going to penalize them, and somehow that's going to make us stronger again. And the emotionality of that is the driving force. And you can't have fact in the equation that disputes that, and that's why we're not doing anything factual behind this. I mean, the only independent, economic fiscal agency out there is the Fed, and they want to take that over and make it non-independent. So
But
there will be no one
everything
to
that you
criticize.
said, but everything that you just said is bearing true, but it's going to benefit the top 1% and it's going to leave everybody else. That's right. He's going to do exact that's what's happening, but at the expense of the average working class, and between redistricting and all these different machinations happening
Well,
at
they
the
still
local
push.
level, there's not going to be any recourse. There's not going to be any.
No, because they slather on top of this the failed economic theory of trickle down. Somehow all these
Which
rich
doesn't
people are
work.
going to take care of everybody. And it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen.
There's another, and again, this is not economics, and I'm not asking Tino to quote on this,
You're
but
bringing
there's
him
a
into.
great, there's a great fear among a number of people. If you take a look at the demographics of the United States, the white population is 58% now. The largest minority population now is Hispanic. It's 20% almost. You start trending that out in 3, 4, 5, 6 years, the white population ends up in a minority, and that's part of the over. We're going to keep that from happening somehow by getting rid of minorities, throwing them out of the country, banning them from entering the country, et cetera, until there's a shortage in IT and all of a sudden they need more Chinese to come in here to run the industries. It's sort of it's a select, it's a lot of pounding on the table, and then someone says to them, oh, by the way, we have nobody to power any of these AI companies, and okay, we're going to let some of these guys in, or we're going to give some visas in South Africa to people, and we're gonna, I mean, it's just tinkering with a machine to try to get your agenda across, and you can't without making concessions to other sectors of the population and the economy. So I don't know where all that's going to head to, but that's some of the driving force behind Republicans and the leadership holding their nose and allowing some of these things to happen. Because their voting base, buys into the fiery rhetoric of, you're going to be a minority, you're going to get screwed. They're going to do in the United States what they did in South Africa. You're going to have, I mean, if we could vote for apartheid now, I don't know how many white Americans would vote for it at this point. Because they're
Colonial.
being scared into believing that it's going to all be taken away from them. So,
It's bleak. It's bleak when you
well, it's
think
bleak
it.
from a political perspective in that sense until some more sanity, prevails, which I, which it's generally cyclical, generally comes back. Generally, when things get so bad, they dump it on the Democrats' lap and say, fix it, until it gets better again, and then they can come
After
back to
they've lined their
power.
pockets. So Jerome Powell is up in early 2026. His
I can't remember exactly, 7 or 14 years. So he's got a ways. It depends on whether or not he chooses to step down. That's ultimately what's
right.
that decision. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, so far there's no indication that that's the case. There's been a couple names floated for the new Fed chair. But right now I don't know of anything that, that's moving that direction or
No, but
not.
they have some ways to try to mitigate his power by appointing governors, that
Yeah,
are
and that that's kind of what's happened
they've been
so
doing
far, try to
that.
kick people off. And that's
Right.
just, but again, all that does is just, I think if you get a bunch of people that are just sort of, again, yes people that want to lower interest rates in the wrong time, it's just going to make matters worse. Could fuel more inflation, and that's just going to again hurt the base, and they got to be cautious. Going from what you said, Arnie, it's a big dragnet, and it's like you're going to hurt
Sure.
immigrants, but you're also going to drag down other people that are in the same sort of boat.
Right.
There's all these things that you kind of run out of the capacity to think about these things. But I was just reading an article today about, or yesterday about, a lot of people that are caretakers for older population, right? We have a growing older geriatric population that's going to need care. And I've talked about housing before, and construction workers are being removed from the country. But what happens to these caregivers
The
if
caregivers,
they get sent abroad? And then what we're going to have? Oh, then what?
right.
I mean,
Well, the thing
it's just
was
sort of
that, I
like
mean,
it just like I said, there's just so much to think about, and I know people want a real easy answer to all of these things, but it is so complicated, and it's a constant pushing of the balloon and pops out somewhere else. We have all these externalities that get generated by a lot of these policies, and right now I'm having a hard time really having anything sort of quasi-optimistic to talk about. Because everything's pointing towards this growth slowdown, and that's just going to exacerbate things. It's going to exacerbate wages, rising healthcare costs, rising food costs. And again, if you look at the data from these guys at Harvard are doing, basically started this once the tariffs were introduced. They started this sort of tariff dashboard thing, where they're sort of trying to estimate price changes and inflation and what sectors of the economy are direct result of it, of the tariffs. And perhaps not really terribly surprising is they find that the highest rates of inflation are in a basket of goods that are consumed by lower income individuals.
sure.
And then the highest income basket is not as less influenced by inflation, by tariffs. And that kind of makes sense because a lot of what lower income people buy is more sort of basic consumer goods, which are going to be hit pretty hard. If you think like bananas or something like this, that's a pretty, it takes up a fairly substantial part of their income. Whereas for higher income individuals, that's not a huge part of their consumption basket, so it doesn't impact them as much. And higher income people will buy a little bit more services than they will commodities and goods. And so,
Sure.
but
Tino.
the fact of the matter is, it's still hitting those lower income families the hardest.
So
Right.
this is the pricing lab, the Digital Data Design Institute of Harvard.
Yeah,
It's
with Carvalho, yeah.
okay, the URL is pricinglab.org, tariff tracker.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. At Harvard is I can't remember the guy's first name, Carvalho. But it's a pretty interesting thing to kind of
Cavallo, yeah,
track.
could
Yep.
Gobenath and Nyman and Tang. Wow.
Yeah. So it shows like what, and it's relatively dynamic. I don't think it's updated like every day, but it's updated relatively regularly. So things like, One week it was leather and stuff like that had the highest impact, and then the next week was sort of like furnishings and these kinds of things.
Right.
But again, it is having these impacts, and I kind of, and I think a lot of us sort of predicted that some of these inflationary impacts would be a little bit more dramatic than they were, but maybe some inventory control by producers and wholesalers and retailers has sort of enabled more of a slow rollout of inflation. It could be just timing. And so you can sort of look at the PPI for first, second, and third, fourth stages. PPI is the producer price index. So this is what producers pay, but you have the first stage would be very, very sort of intermediate, very early stage. Like I'm taking wheat and turning it into flour. And then the second stage is I'm taking the wheat and I'm packaging it and the flour and I'm packaging. The third stage would be I'm taking the wheat and turning it into bread. And then the fourth stage might be something like I'm the retailer and I'm buying the bread from the baker. And so you do see some slightly different sort of dynamics in what's been going on in these PPIs as well, those four different versions of the producer price index, which is also providing a little bit of a sort of crystal ball of what inflation could look like down the road.
Well, the
Because
other
these
impact
prices aren't
is
going to pass directly onto consumers immediately. They might take some time.
the other impact is if they're spending more money on that, they're spending less money on other things. My nephew, who's in the home repair and home reconstruction business down in Florida, said the last 3 4 months are the worst 3 4 months that he's had in 10 years. People just aren't spending money putting in new windows, repainting, putting up siding, all that kind of stuff. They don't have the money for it.
Or they're concerned about the future, and people kind of slip into this, what we refer to as a precautionary savings mode,
Yeah, let's
where
put it
you
off.
obviously are not, you're like, I better start saving because who knows what's going to happen next week. I could lose my
Right.
job, blah, blah, blah.
And
I got
that
to
will
start
affect
saving.
travel and tourism. It affects all kinds of other industries.
Everything. I mean, and that's just it. It's like, you could bring up a particular thing and we could certainly riff on almost any topic you can think about and come up with some sort of scenario. Hopefully not a doomsday scenario, but some sort of scenario where, we start thinking about, well, your nephew's going to start losing his work, so he's generating less income. Then you have this sort of, there's referred to as the multiplier effect. So he's going to buy less nails, and then the hardware store can't pay its employees, so they let a guy off, and then
Right,
that person ends
right.
up, and it just kind of, and then now they're getting hit with higher in healthcare insurance.
So we're in this big picture across the country, no place is safe, scenario where no one is, the predictability is at one of its lowest points in my lifetime about what's going to happen and with
Oh
what's
yeah,
going to take
absolutely.
out. What
And I
does
mean,
that mean for
we also got
Montana?
to.
Let's switch
Well,
to gears to
let me just say this
Montana.
one thing first, and then we'll talk about Montana. I mean,
Yeah.
it's also very fragile, and I think a lot of the GDP growth that we've talked about is so. Once upon a time, we thought that the economy drove the stock market, right? There was a connection between, well, the economy is doing well, then the stock market's going to go up because projected earnings are going to rise at some sort of rate. And so if projected earnings are starting to rise, and that's going to start pushing up stock markets, and projected earnings rise because people are spending, they're buying Tide and going to Disneyland or whatever. But now I think what's kind of happened is the opposite. So we're having this sort of, I don't know if it's a bubble. I mean, I was looking at P ratios, the other price equity ratios, the other day, and like I saw some with like 300 or 400. I can't remember which one. Yeah, it was crazy. And I don't remember
Right,
which
that's
one.
crazy.
Normal is quote unquote between 20 and 50, right?
50, right.
Let's just use that as a ballpark. It used to be lower than that, but I think it's kind of edging up a little bit. But what that's starting to do now is, again, I think we talked about this last time, that the richest 20% account for 50% of consumer expenditures. And if that is being driven by wealth, so again, there's been estimates. This is kind of dated now, and maybe it's different now, but an estimate was that 4 cents on the dollar, your wealth increases by a dollar, you increase your spending by 4 cents. So with this huge wealth increase over the past 5 years since the end of COVID, that's a lot of the richest people pumping a lot of money. And if that stock market crashes and that spending goes, everything unwinds at that same rate, 4 cents on the dollar, negative 4 cents on the negative $1, that consumption spending collapses. And if that consumption expenditure collapses, then it's not going to be pretty.
No.
What does this mean for Montana? Well, Montana's got a lot of agricultural stuff. So I'm sure that a lot of our agriculture producers are, and I'm not an agricultural economist, so I'm not as familiar with sort of the ag side of the state. But I can't imagine, we do a lot of soy, did some exports to a lot to Canada, Korea, and China. Obviously there's been retaliatory tariffs. We certainly have zero trade with, we used to have a trade surplus in soy until our tariffs went up, and now we have a with China, now we have a zero trade with China. So it's however much money that we could have been generating by selling soy to China is now shifted to Brazil. So that's good news. And then, in tourism, I mean, tourism could, is a double edged, it could go either way.
Right.
If a lot of tourism, if a lot of people are feeling less positive about the future, they're not going to go to France, or they're not going to go to Australia, or
They
Botswana,
might
or
be
whatever.
banned
They're
from
going to go
going
there,
there. Who
right?
knows?
They might come to Montana, so it could actually be beneficial because it's a lower cost alternative, right? Like, I've always wanted to see Glacier, so that's a possibility. And Montana's sort of becoming a more of a touristy kind of destination than it had been historically. Other sectors, we don't have any real large manufacturers in the state.
Right.
Most
But for example, in Missoula, you rely a lot on university and healthcare. I mean, the reverse, the scenario you laid out a few minutes ago, people don't can't afford to send their kids to college. They say take a gap year. Or healthcare doubles, so you just stop going. You just cancel your healthcare insurance.
Yeah, and that's all these what we refer to as pecuniary externalities then, because it has changes in the price. If I said as the healthy people quit, if the healthy people's premia go up so high that they just quit, then that's going to have a negative impact on people who have to buy the insurance. So instead of paying, I'm obviously making these numbers up, $1,000, now they're up to $1,500 because you've gotten rid of the safest sort of class of
Sure.
healthcare needers. And so, it's going to be interesting. I mean, and then of course that's going to drive inflation too, because overall inflation, because healthcare expenditure is a fairly
Right.
large percentage of your total consumer basket of goods. So that also will push up inflation.
Sure.
Couple
It
that
is.
with, rising costs, like if we send all the Ghanaians home to who are help providing our older Americans help, then costs are going to rise on the on the provision for elderly care as well. So I mean, I in all points, I guess this would be my one of my four forecasts is like, will we see inflation really go up? I mean, my wish list would include something like, let's
Wait a
get rid
minute,
of the tariff.
Tino,
I know I'm
hold
jumping
on.
the gun, but
Hold on that. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break.
all
Our
right.
guest is Tino Sonora with the University of Montana. We will be back after these words. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Tino Sonora, So, Tino, we can.
with Arnie, with a special year-end,
Yeah, well, he's going to
prediction.
give his wish list for 2026. We could pound and chew and cut and dice 2025 a million different ways, and it's still going to be, pretty much a stew of unknown makeup. And the impact of it is going to be, good and bad, and not what some people expect. And I mean, it's just out of anyone's real predictability control of the impact. However, we're going to rely on you to talk about your wish list for 2026. And if you could have some of the things happen that you would like to have happen as an economist, what would those be?
Well, clearly, first and foremost, well, sort of the overarching theme for everything is eradicating or at least diminishing the amount of policy uncertainty that exists.
Yes.
I mean, if we could
We
just
agree.
get some stability, that would go a long way. So I think sort of, and that's sort of an overarching theme for everything. If I could
Right.
have one thing, I would like to reduce policy uncertainty. This tariffs, I just heard today another 5% tariffs because Mexico is not giving the United States enough water. Is it serious? I don't know.
Right.
Do I believe it? I don't know. But some of these things actually turn into policy.
Right.
So let's try to get rid of this policy uncertainty thing. I think obviously the tariffs thing is just bad policy. I mean, I have no qualms with a policy or a tariff which is directed for unfair trade practices. I think in some cases it's needed, and I think we've discussed that before here with some sort of things like corporate espionage, but they're targeted, and usually go through some sort of arbitration in order for you to get the permission, quote unquote, to get the tariff, right? So we use the WTO. The United States makes a case. Oh, these guys are doing bad things. Oh, it's okay. Yes, you can do tariffs. But this sort of blanket tariff thing, and just A, it doesn't work. It's going to be deleterious to the economy. And moreover, we're seeing, our place as a global center of the economy start to diminish.
Sure.
Ironically, I heard yesterday that China has a $1 trillion trade surplus.
Yeah.
Not with us, but with the rest
Right.
of the world for the most part. So it's like, well, they didn't, they just moved from the United States to somewhere else. So what's going to happen? So we need to get rid of the tariffs. The tariffs have to be, again, I think there's a place for some tariffs to be enacted if they're targeted and for a specific reason.
Well, that was the policy we had before this, that only very narrow special interests had problems with when it affected their industry in some
Right.
way,
Right, right,
like softwood industry.
right. And that's very important
But
for
the
the rest of
average
the country.
person,
And
if
I
you
can
would have
remember.
asked them 2 years ago or 3 years
Right.
ago, are tariffs a big problem? They would have said, what are you talking about?
No, exactly. Or are Canadian tariffs on our softwood pulp exports a bad thing? And they're like, yeah, it affects like eight people, right? For
Right.
the part.
What's next,
Yeah.
Tino? What's next?
Next would be, I think we need to, well, I mean, again, going into this uncertainty thing, let's, we need good data. You mentioned earlier, Ernie, about, the Fed is kind of flying blind. Well, yes and no. I mean, obviously you can rely on some private institutions were providing some data on, employment and prices and these kinds of things. Certainly the guys at Harvard were doing some things. So it's not completely in the dark, but we need to sort of ground our policy making much more in data and not just flying by the seat of
Emotion.
our pants. And that goes to that uncertainty thing again. I really think we need, I mean, one of my biggest wish lists, and it's been this for a while, we have got to figure out our healthcare system.
Yeah,
Not
we're the
so much
only
our
developed
healthcare.
nation in the world that doesn't have universal health care. We
Right.
can't be the only ones that are right and everybody else is wrong.
I mean, obviously a lot of other places have issues and it's not perfect. I understand, but if you have somebody who's paying $1,100 this month and $3,000 the next month, something's wrong.
Right.
Something's wrong. And we need to, and all these little restrictions that we put on. Like you cannot, if you have a healthcare insurance company in Montana, you can't operate in Wyoming. That's ridiculous. Let's
Right.
create this sort of monopolization of local monopolies for insurance. So that and early childhood care is another big issue. We need to figure that out too. So these are big, big, big issues with a lot of competing interests. I know, I think we also need to figure out, from an economics perspective, how do we wisely use AI? Is it here to stay? Is it just a blip? My guess is it's here to stay in some form of another, but we need to figure out what to do for people who are put out by AI, who lose their jobs,
Right.
retraining programs. Whatever. If I knew the answer, I'd be in Washington,
Let's
D.C.
ask AI what to do.
Yeah, what would AI do?
Yeah.
Well,
You know, it's
when
funny.
I...
I think most people don't realize the healthcare issue is really one that sticks in my craw over and over again. It was less than 50 years ago when healthcare in the United States, the health insurance companies were not for profit. It was under the Reagan administration that they made that switch. And all of a sudden, billions and billions of dollars were being made by these healthcare intermediaries. And our quality of life and our, life longevity and all that have not improved. We ranked 18th in the world. So it's not like we're paying all this more money and therefore we're healthier than everybody else. We're not. You know, the mortality rates, the infant mortality rates, all those other things have dropped since it's become public. You know,
Yeah,
so
and
the
life
notion
expectancy.
that
Well,
somehow there's something wrong with universal health care, you know, because in Canada you might have to wait 8 months to get a knee replaced, is not a valid, you know, comparison.
no, it's not. And certainly most other countries have private insurance for
True.
that particular that reason exactly. And by the way, if you need a desperately need a knee replacement in Canada, you can get one. I mean,
Yes.
people are put on a waiting list for 8 months because, like, look, your knee's fine, you'll be fine for a few months.
Right.
Right.
You know, and or pay a premium or pay us an extra $5,000 and boom, we'll have it to you tomorrow. You know,
Right.
it's not like, you know, it's everybody's waiting 8 months for a knee
It's
replacement.
not like it's a third world country there and you can't get health care.
Right. I mean, but you know, like a lot of like if I look at like the German, so the sort of what they refer, I don't know if they're still under the same program because European countries have gone through some various changes to their healthcare systems. But the Bismarck plan, which is what Germany uses, like everybody pays the exact same. They have private insurers
Right.
and everybody pays the same premium set by the state. And so what the German insurance companies do is they don't compete on price, they compete on quality of service.
Right. I mean, if
So
you get back to even our version of it, doesn't mean you're going to get fast service. Go in and try to get an echocardiogram scheduled in Missoula, Montana. It's 4 months to get one,
yeah, I mean,
unless
exactly.
you're dying and they have to do it
Right,
right
and
away.
then they have to do it, you know, and the same thing, you know, there's a bunch of kind of funny stories about MRIs. It's like if I have the MRI at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday versus an MRI on Monday morning at 7, prices could be $5,000 different.
Yep,
I mean, it's
exactly.
just this is not sustainable. And that's why sort of the idea behind universal, quote unquote, universal health care is again, you generate a lot more of a portfolio, if you will, of health quality.
And
Very
there's a
super
balance
healthy
between
people are
rural and
common. Yeah,
urban.
right. And when you have an insurance situation like we do, where you know there's an incentive if you're ill to get insurance, and you know obviously only ill people get insurance, and then
Right.
their premiums are really expensive because the probability of any one of those individuals getting you know ill or something is going to be close to 100%, and it's not just going to be ill; it's going to be ill with a capital I, right?
Right.
But we need to sort this out. It's a drain on the economy. It's sucking resources away from other things. And again, our health care itself is good. How we do it,
Is
how you
bad.
pay for it is not.
Yeah.
Tino, any parting words you'd like to leave us in the audience with?
Well, you know, it seems to me, guys, that like we've kind of been on a sort of like a skipping record for the past, you know, like
12
guessing the
months.
off, yeah, right. Expression, and despite all of these sort of doomsday predictions, you know, we're still kind of like, well, maybe it's going to work out. So I guess on my wish list too would be something along the lines of maybe we can just kind of keep stumbling along and things will be okay. I can only have hope, right? You know, my left-hand side of my brain, I can remember which side is which, says that's things not looking good, but my right side is always remains hopeful.
That's a good place to finish up. Arnie, I'll see you next Sunday.
See you next Sunday. Thank you again, Tino, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.